This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom.
Everyone out there in Supernatural fandom land, and welcome to the 33rd episode of The Women of Letters. Jules here with you, with the delightful and only slightly handicapped Amy, who broke her foot and is on the mend, but she still has a big moon boot on.
I do still have a moon boot on, but only for one more week, I say optimistically. So, yes. Hi, everybody. It's lovely to be back for our 33rd episode. That's a lot. I'm quite surprised.
We talk a lot about Supernatural, don't we?
We do. I quite like that we do that.
We could probably talk a lot more about it if we had more time in our life.
We probably could. I'm quite sure we could. But
yeah. Well, I look forward to maybe hiatus. We need to start our project of going back to the beginning and blogging on every episode ever. Or should we save that? Should we save that for our when the series finally finishes? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm up for it.
Yeah,
I'm always happy to talk about it.
That would help manage our grief after it's all over.
There will be no managing the grief. The grief will be all encompassing.
After we get out of rehab,
after we correct ourselves from being in a fetal position on the floor for like a week.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know how we're going to feel. And everyone, it's not going to end at the moment,
but it is.
Sometime within our lifetime and possibly the next couple of years. So being realistic here.
Wow, now you've made me sad.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to be really sad. I've actually had people who are not fans of the show go, what are you going to do when the show finishes? Because they know what I'm like. And I'm like, I don't want to think about it. It's going to be terrible.
I remember.
But we'll always have it.
Of course, you know, the show won't, it's just different. I mean, you know, it's different when the show's not new every week. It doesn't mean the show goes away or the fandom goes away. So, you know, that'll keep going and we'll keep doing podcasts.
Yes, we will. Woo!
We'll never stop talking about Supernatural. And this week we have an episode that I knew we both loved.
We did.
About a Boy by the wonderful, wonderful Adam Glass. Oh, Amy, where are we going to start with this one?
I love this episode. Spoiler alert, I love this episode. I just loved it. From the beginning, I had a happy smile on my face. Oh, well, maybe right at the beginning I didn't have a happy smile on my face. I was a little bit sad right at the top. But even once Sam, you know, was trying to pep talk Dean and whatever, I really loved it. I was seal clapping and laughing out loud and like, yeah, and I really had a lot of fun, and I was like messaging out, oh my god, that line was hilarious, you know, which I never ever do, because I just had to spill forth the fact that something made me, you know, jump up. Well, if I could jump up and down, I can't because I'm broken, but if I could, I would have. It was just wonderful. I loved it. It was so much fun. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. But also really moving.
Yes. I mean, and I think that's a hallmark of Adam's work, really, is that, you know, he always has that sort of emotional depth in there, whatever the episode is about. I think he, you know, the boys' relationship is always sort of front and centre there. And like, I agree, there was so many laugh-out-loud moments in this episode, and so many, like, And talk about a gif-able episode, because just about every reaction shot from Jared / Sam was gif-able, I tell you. It's just his looks. And then everything Dylan Everett did as Teen Dean was gif-able, so you could put next to a gif as grown-up Dean. I mean, it really was every moment that you wanted to savour and see again.
It was really, it was one of the ones that it finished and I stopped and I played it straight again. And then the next morning I played it while I was getting ready for work. So and then when I got home, I played it again. I was like, I love this episode. So, and you know, and that, I mean, I always watch the episodes multiple times and I, you know, I love Supernatural. We talk about it a lot.
I think the viewers, listeners, have figured it out. But you know what I mean.
So I always rewatch the episodes, but you know, every so often one comes along where I'm like, I just want to watch it all the time. And this was one of those ones. I've watched it twice today. Oh my God. Once this morning, once this afternoon. So I broke it up with it, you know, like a few hours in between. But yeah, it was wonderful. And like you said, it was like the, you know, it was just this, there were so many bromance in it. It was just, oh, whether the bromance were between, you know, giant grown up Dean or little grown up Dean and Sam, you know, they still feel like Sam and Dean. And that was, I think the most spectacular thing about this was that there was not one single moment where I was taken out of the story or the moment by the fact that Dean Winchester was not being played by Jensen Ackles. It still felt like Dean Winchester every step of the way. And Sam and Dean still felt like Sam and Dean. Their dialogue was Sam and Dean. Their, you know, their chemistry was there. You know, the brothers' chemistry was still there. And I think that was the remarkable thing for me about this episode, is that Dylan Everett managed to play Dean in not Dean and completely be Dean to the point where I never for a moment thought it wasn't Dean. Yeah. And you know how I feel about Dean.
I think the other side of that equation was Jared as Sam. I mean, I think that sold it being our Sam and Dean so much, because that is exactly how he normally is. And all those reaction shots and everything were and how he was with Dean was, you know, just so on the money. And look, I, you know, I think I'll put you up as a barometer, because I know that you wouldn't, you know, certainly an episode that didn't have Jensen in the middle half of it would not be your preference. But as you say, what you did get was still got Dean. So, you got at least half that, equation. And I think, you know, kudos to both, Jared and Dylan for how they played it. There is a wonderful interview out there on, I think it's called After TV. It's linked on the
After Buzz TV.
Yeah. And it's linked on the Super Wiki, where Dylan talks about, all the advice and the help he got from Jared in preparing for the role. And, you know,
I love that Jared actually said that no one knows Dean better than he does except Jensen.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was like, oh, that was so awesome. And it's true, because, I mean, you know, he plays the brother, but not only that, he's been there with Jensen all the way through and watched Jensen play that character. So it was really interesting also to hear Dylan say that there were times when Jared would give him tips about how he thought Jensen would probably do that, you know, like play it in that scene as Dean. And, you know, I thought that was really fantastic.
I also loved the, now, I'll be interested to get your reaction on this. He said that Jared said to him that you've got to remember that Jensen's a model.
I know. I was
and,
like, really?
You know, he's very expressive, and that shows in how he, you know, in his face and how he walks and talks. I'm not quite sure that Jared wasn't taking the piss at that point.
I thought maybe too, because I was like, what?
I just thought, are you sure
teasing.
Jared? Yeah, that's what I mean. Dylan didn't say it like that.
No, I don't think Dylan read it like that. But like, no, I actually, I did the same. I listened. I was like, wait a minute. Is he like having a bit of a go?
Oh, that's exactly what I'm thinking. I'm thinking he's
because Jensen's not a model. He has modelled.
I know. It just seemed like.
But he's a male modelling son of a bitch.
Yes. I will say that in certain parts of fandom a number of years ago, we did used to call, and it's ironic with this episode, we used to call Jensen Hansel after the character in Zoolander.
He is very Zoolander.
So, yes, whatever Jared said, however he meant it, it did seem to work. But, yeah, that was my first reaction, is like, come on, Dylan, he was taking the piss.
I think he was having a go. Yeah, I did too.
And I can imagine, you know, Jared's now played that interview to Jensen going, see, I told him you're a model.
I know, I laughed. I was just like, what? Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. But great, anyway, of Jared to be there for Dylan and you know, give him that kind of feedback.
So we start, let's go back and, you know, we start the episode, oh, after the, you know, mysterious flash of light and JP disappearing, which was all very mysterious. Did you have an idea what it was at that point?
Only because I've read the synopsis. Of course I had an idea. I've written a preview about it. I knew what was going on.
Oh, okay then.
I didn't know. Well, yeah, I guess I knew, but I didn't know exactly. But no, I kind of had a fair idea of what was going on. But no, not exactly what was going on. And it was a cool start to the episode. I thought it was a lot of, you know, intriguing. If you didn't know, if you hadn't just written a preview for it.
But then we had a wonderful scene in the bunker with Dean researching, which, like, kudos to Serge, who directed, and Brad Creaser, who was the DP on this episode, and who I didn't look up actually who edited it, whether it was Nicole or James, but that was just wonderful. I mean, it really portrayed, you know, Dean's intensity, but also his sort of almost sort of how he's trying to contain himself was portrayed in that sequence, I think, you know, that he's holding things in and you know, and it ends up, it gets, the shots get tighter and tighter as it ends up in his bedroom, and tight on him as he's sort of almost curled in up around that book, you know, reading about things.
And the, with it too was like, it's almost like was his inner monologue of all the people saying all the poisonous things in his mind. You know, there was Crowley and there was Kane, you know, I knew I connected to you, you know, why are you not giving in, why are you fighting who you are? And
yes,
all this stuff that people have said to him through this whole Mark of Kane in episode, episode being the episode that's happening to him at the moment, that was obviously is playing on his mind, you know. So I thought that was great too. It was almost like a reflection of what he's thinking as he's kind of poring over all these books. And he was even looking at scar removal and, you know,
documents. You got that idea that, you know, nothing was off the table. He was desperate in what he was, you know, going from law to biology, basically, to try and look at what he might be able to do. And then, of course, Sam comes in and we find out that, you know, it's been a couple of weeks, basically, that, oh, he hasn't, it was a week since he'd left the bunker. So, you know, that he's really sort of locking himself away, trying to sort this out. And again,
and the other thing too, just on that, was his room was a real pickle. And you know, we always see Dean's room and it's pretty neat.
Yeah,
like when he first moved into that room, he hung all the stuff on the walls and all that kind of thing. But then even since then, it's been quite neat. But in this situation, there was all crap piled up behind his bed. His bed wasn't made. There's washing hanging out of the washing basket. I've obviously looked at this. What do you call it? Like the vanity cabinet was open, you know, and you could see all his shaving cream stuff inside. It was almost like, you know, it was just this, there was a real dishevelment around.
Yeah, it was a glimpse inside Dean, metaphorically, of his emotional state, and that it was being dominated by this, you know, by the Mark of Cain and his search for an answer to it. And, yeah, the fact that, you know, there even really wasn't room for him on the bed anymore. And then, you know, we have Sam come in and who's obviously concerned about him. And, oh!
I love that scene. Sam is just doing me in this season. He's just incredibly amazing with how he's actually relaying his support to Dean as well, because it's you know, it's not smothering at all, but he's so worried and supportive. But you know, I loved that whole scene. I loved everything Sam said, you know.
Well, I think as we talked about last week too, you know, this point their relationship's at now, where they're, you know, this season have been so much better about the give and take in the relationship, about not, you know, not hearing everything through the lens of their own neuroses and pathologies, and that giving each other space so that, you know, Sam is conveying that he's concerned and what he thinks Dean should do without, you know, without pushing Dean, without getting angry that Dean's doing things. So, you know, it gives Dean the space to sort of consider that what Sam says, you know, about, well, let's go on a hunt, sort of, rather than just react against it as if, you know, he's hearing Sam say what you're doing isn't important or something, as he might have in the past. So I think there's...
And the other thing, you know, just the little joke between them too. I mean, Sam really played along with that. I mean, I'm quite sure he didn't believe in the Eastern Bunny at 12 years old, but seeing as he found out about monsters at about 8 years old, right? That's all I thought. I thought, hang on a minute.
Oh, but that might be why he thought the Easter Bunny was real.
Well, that's true. He could.
Because it's if Dad's out fighting werewolves,
why can't there be an Easter Bunny?
Exactly.
Not that I think he ever got any Easter eggs from that bunny. But my doubt. But I read it too as him just kind of going along with Dean and, doing the joke. And both of them had just the tiniest little hints of smiles on their faces. And so it was like a really nice kind of normal moment that they were having in amongst the insanity that they're having to deal with.
It's a shared memory and experience. So whatever age...
Sam believed in
the Easter Bunny. Till the point is, it's obviously been something they've teased each other about.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe he did believe about it, but the fact that, you know, Dean corrects him, oh, you were 11, not 11 and a half.
It was a seriously cute moment that, in like a very powerful moment that I think, you know, added to the weight of having the brothers there for each other, or Sam there for Dean. I think he totally rolled with that joke for Dean.
Well, it was and also it signaled that, you know, there's a lot when Sam keeps saying, you know, we'll get through this and we'll do this, you know, we'll beat this together, you know, which prompts Dean's comment about the Easter Bunny. I mean, it's giving them both space to acknowledge that, you know, Sam can't guarantee he's going to fix it, but Dean can accept that Sam's, you know, the emotion and sincerity behind that, at the same time as, you know, so it's just a lot more gentler interaction than they might have had in the past, where there would have been on one side or the other, there would have been more anger. And I think these moments of harking back to childhood or to earlier times, you know, are very often a mark of the closeness, them being at a good point, or you know, because it's remembering a good point of connection between them. So I think it really, you know, they're also at the same, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, acknowledging that, you know, there's not, you know, they are stuck at the moment, and that's the hard thing is that...
they don't know where to turn. They've got no answers.
Yeah. At the same time, I think, you know, I think there's a part of Sam that, yeah, obviously, and I think truly it's not just hope. I mean, he does believe they can beat it. And also he's seen Dean can resist it too. And I think part of him maybe wants to, you know, it's like, get out in the world and you can find out more and more how you can live with this, which you're not going to get sitting in your bedroom. Room.
Yeah. But, I, you know, there was a moment there too when Dean says to him, do you really believe that? And Sam's like, yeah, damn right I do. That I actually looked at Dean and thought, he's actually starting to believe Sam, which, you know, like he wasn't before. He was like, you know, Sam's saying it and he's hearing it, but he's not believing it. But it was something in this episode totally, I think, shifted for Dean. Right from that moment right through to the end, there was like a shift, I think, in which must mean it's going to go horribly pear-shaped in a moment.
Oh, Amy, right. I feel like I've contaminated you. There would have been a time in your past when you've said, and it's all going to be okay.
It's going to go horribly wrong any moment.
You believe that Winchester's going to be all right, but living in the East, but they don't.
No, I don't anymore. But no, I did. I actually thought in that moment, I think Dean's actually... despite himself, starting to at least want to believe
Sam.
Well,
I think and it's a sign of their relationship being in a good place is that Dean can feel he can rely on Sam carrying that, the emotion of that hope, if you like. So even if Dean doesn't have it, he can take on some of Sam's hope, because they're in a good place and it's not clouded with, you know, anger or something else. So yes, what happens actually happens. Of course, Sam's always also setting himself up, by these continued reiterations that it will be fixed, that, you know, it's setting him up to feel really shitty if things start to go pear-shaped and he's not fixing it. So, yeah. And that's a familiar Winchester trope there that, you know, I always think back to when Sam couldn't save Dean from hell and couldn't get him out of hell, and it's, you know, where that took him is going to be difficult for him if that happens. Who knows? Who knows? Anyway, on to aliens.
Oh, gosh. Jeez, those boys hate aliens.
That was so funny.
Oh, my gosh.
It was good timing, actually, because there'd been a lot of talk over the last couple of weeks about possible return of the X-Files. So I was feeling rather nostalgic, and it was just, I thought it was very, very well timed. But, of course, who wouldn't think aliens? Bright, shiny light.
Yeah, you'd think bright. Well, yeah, I like that Sam's like fairies or angels. Yeah. The aliens.
We have reasonable things that we believe, not aliens.
Fairies, of course. Oh, jeez. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, you have these. Well, what was the other bright light one? There was another bright light one. I remember. Anyway, I can't remember. But, yeah, I liked it too. I liked the fact that they're just like, oh, God, what have we even stepped into here? But, and then there was the lovely moment outside the bar where Sam's like, okay, you go check on, and Dean's like, whoa, wobble, wobble. And Sam's like, oh, we can do it together. And it was just such a nice read of Sam, just instantly read that his brother was a little bit, lacked the confidence to do it on his own and didn't sort of go into a bar. And he very gently sort of said, oh, well, we can do it together, whatever, you know, like not a big deal. And Sam, Dean's like, no, I can do it. But even when Sam walked away, patted him on the shoulder, which he did at the end of last week's episode as well, when he said, you know, we're going to be okay, and he patted Dean on the shoulder, and he did that as he walked away. And it's just these little I'm here, you know, it's just these little reassuring taps. It's so cool. It's so cool.
Meanwhile, all of fandom is going, don't split up. Something always happens when you split up.
What are you thinking? You know now Dean's going to disappear in a bright white light. That always happens.
When does that ever not happen? Actually, I hadn't thought of that, but it is sort of a nice callback to the, you know, clap your hands if you believe when Dean did get taken, and the beautiful X-Files tribute at the beginning of that episode. But, you know, you can think back to where the boys were then when, you know, Solar Sam just hooked up with the hippie chick and didn't even bother, you know, after that really looking for Dean. Despite Dean telling him that's, you know, there's that hilarious scene in the bar where Dean's telling him that, you know, you're meant to sit in the dark and suffer. And it's like, can't I still hook up with the chick while I do that?
No.
So that, you know, they have come a long way, even though that was under, you know.
Well, Sam was a little bit soulless at the time.
He was a little bit soulless at the time, but you know, I still think you're right that there was that both immediate recognition that Dean was hesitant and apprehensive, and, you know, that Sam offered it in a way that was, you know, it was there. And the fact that he's still, like, he is trusting Dean. I mean, he's not.
But that he has to do that, because if he's saying this, he has to back it. And I think that's the greatest thing that he's doing, is that he's not just saying, I believe in you, Dean. He's showing Dean.
Yes, he's showing
Dean. And that's what makes the difference.
Yeah. Definitely. And then Dean does go into the bar.
Yeah, he does. I loved the whole bar scene. It was awesome.
The actress, and I don't know her name actually,
she was fabulous.
Tina. She was grown up.
Grown up and little Tina was great, but grown up, I loved grown up Tina straight away.
What? Yes,
I really love that character.
She was Kelly O'Brien. Kelly O'Brien played adult Tina, and Madeline Arthur, of course, played young Tina. But great chemistry with Dean, and I love that you know, the connection that you know, she was a bit of a female Dean, basically, without Hunting, Dean. And you know, the fact that they could compare, you know, war she stories from the from living in motels. I believe Adam Glass said the whole 101 Ways with Mac and Cheese was from his childhood.
Oh, really? I hope he didn't have, what was that stuff?
Marshmallow fluff.
Marshmallow fluff in mac and cheese. Ugh. I hope Adam didn't have that.
Again, point of cultural difference. I know we've mentioned mac and cheese before in that it's not, it doesn't hold the place in Australia that it does in the US. And also, we do not have marshmallow fluff in Australia.
I don't even know what that is.
It's like, it's like the inside of a marshmallow in a jar.
Oh, that actually sounds kind of awesome.
Yeah.
But not in macaroni and cheese.
No. So it's often used in like pie toppings or making, I think you can use it in brownies or various sorts of pie things. It's one of those foodstuffs that doesn't quite seem like a foodstuff. It seems a little bit
in jars and cans.
Yeah, it seems like it should have the word poly hyphen something something in front of it.
I'm sure it's got that on the ingredients.
I have bought it. There's a company here called USA Foods where you can buy US groceries from, and occasionally when I have a recipe that calls for these bizarre things, that's where I and I have bought marshmallow fluff.
Right. I never even knew it existed.
Yeah, you're possibly not a lack in your life there. And yes, I don't know if Sam thought it was exotic.
Bless.
No wonder he's eating salads.
Yeah, he certainly, it was all that food Dean fed him when he was a kid. I've never thought about that before. That's why he eats salads. That is why he eats salads.
You didn't have anything green till the age of 17, probably.
Exactly. He did. He had like onion rings or something. What, something? Was it eat your vegetables?
Funyuns, which are like a chip type product.
Yeah, one of those.
Made of onions.
Anyway.
I mean, that was both, it was a lovely moment between Tina and Dean, but also another reflection back to his childhood and what it was like for him as a kid and looking after Sammy. So, you know,
love those moments.
Layers and layers.
I can never get enough of the reminiscing to when they were kids moments. They're just wonderful. And the other thing about that one was too that when Sam rang, he answered the phone, which I think in the past when he's been with a chick, he has not done when he hasn't been, you know, like in when he's been in a different place. He's like checked it out, hang up, put it back in the pocket.
Well, I thought of that generally with that interaction. I mean, it says again, it's a lot about where Dean's at the moment. But I think it's also about him, you know, he's at a point now where he can actually have a conversation with an attractive woman.
Yeah.
And it's that, and he can enjoy that. And I'm not saying if she hadn't been around as older Tina for longer, they wouldn't have hooked up. I'm sure they would have, because there was some sparks there.
There were some sparks, and I think he was definitely looking hesitant when she was like, I'm going to go, and he's like, oh, God, will I take the call or let her go? Like, there was definitely that. Oops, sorry, my dog just took my earphones. There was definitely that little bit of hesitation as to what he actually wanted to happen in that moment going on there.
Yeah, you know, it's those times when you just wish
the episode. She was lovely.
Yeah, well, I wish the episode was longer so they could have had the scene where they hooked up, then she gets taken.
I would have liked that scene a lot.
I think that would be, I think Dean could do with a bit of loving at the moment. I think
I'm always for it.
Yeah. You volunteer as tribute, do you?
Totally.
But I just think a little bit of that, you know, some intimacy, a bit of sex to relieve the tension, take his mind off things. I don't think it would be a good thing for him at the moment. It might be a good thing for Sam too.
Definitely a good thing for Sam. But what was great, though, was that he was able to sit there, have this great conversation with this woman, was, you know, drinking, able to be sitting there having beer and whiskey and, you know, having quite a few drinks, and nothing happened. Like, nothing, you know, he didn't hulk out. like no. he was and terrified I think there was... of doing, which was great. So he was actually being Dean instead of trying to, you know, eat salads and stuff like that and sort of be the anti-Dean. He was actually able to be him, Sam. He was actually able to be himself and still be himself.
Yes, and I think there was a nice, in a way, a bit of a contrast back to where we saw him as Demon Dean at the beginning of the series, and when we know he was, you know, he was rather rather horrible to Anne Marie, who he hooked up with in the bar that he and Crowley were hanging out with, and you know, this was
a bit of that thing with the thing. So you know, how horrible he did the thing was with... that? I don't know how horrible you can call it. Sorry.
Afterwards, he was horrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there was a bit of a contrast there. As you say, it was also here that he's in control. He can have a drink. He can have a conversation. And he can be Dean. And, you know, I think those things are giving us all, and him particularly, you know, hope that, you know, maybe he can live with this, except for the fact that we've watched Supernatural for 10 seasons and we know that everything's going to go ass up.
Yes, especially if it's looking like it's not. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. No, it's terrible living in this sort of state of heightened fear and apprehension, isn't it? It's like...
paranoia.
Oh, you know, just about every scene. You're waiting for the other shoe to drop, so to speak, and it's like, it's all going to go bad. So, of course, yes, then we have the appearance of Teen Dean in the particularly creepy basement cells with young Tina. And, you know, it's, again... you know, testament to Dylan's acting that, you know, immediately it just feels like Dean.
He was fantastic. It was immediately it just feels like Dean. And, I mean, I think a lot of that also is, you know, the dialogue was written so well that it sounded like Dean. So, you know, and then he was able to say all the words. But it was, you know, it was in the inflections on his words. It was, you know, the cadence of how he spoke. It was the mannerisms.
His expressions,
the way he held his body, you know, just everything was Dean. He did. It was amazing to watch. I thought, I hope Jensen's seen it. You know, and sort of, I'm sure he has. But, you know, like it would be amazing to watch somebody else do that, you know, being you. And you know, because last time we were like really stunned at how Dean he was, but it was a Dean we'd never seen before because it was like a 14-year-old Dean that we'd never seen before. So, you know, it was different. It was different character. And it was just like, how do I play this character as a younger person? And he did an amazing job of that. But in this case, he was actually playing an existing character in that age, you know, and it was quite remarkable at how Dean-y he was.
I just have to do a shout out here. Now, a few years ago, it's amazing to me the fact that I can say a few years ago in this fandom. Now it was actually like 2010, I think. I did like a bingo card of all the fanfic tropes that had turned up in Supernatural, and you know, one of the few that we hadn't had was de-aging. So for those out there who don't read fanfic, is there's a common trope where one of the boys ends up either as his younger self through, you know, magic or time travel or something, or as we saw in this episode, himself in a younger body. So I must go back and update the bingo card, because it's a very popular trope, and it often, you know, again, like the many things we've used in Supernatural, it gives you a chance to see the characters in another light, if you will.
Yeah.
Of course, while we've got Dean trying to work out how to save Tina, Sam goes looking for Dean at the bar and talk about hulking out.
I loved it. It was like, where's my brother? Bang your head on the bar. Poof.
Absolutely no hesitation. Of course, I suppose that's the irony.
I love it when Sam's like that.
But it's the irony is that, you know, Dean's under control, but Sam's not when Dean goes missing. And it was Sam who was not going to let anything get in his way of finding...
which I thought was could be like a really nice teaser as to which direction Sam's going to be going, to help to get Dean, you know, get this marker cane off Dean. But yeah, yeah, it was, you know, he had no control. I just love it. I love it when Sam's like that, though.
He was being fierce, little brother.
He was being very fierce.
Absolutely fierce. And again, I think that's, you know, that's the Sam we know and love. And then we have that absolute, like, must be one of the it's, you know, an instant classic moment where Dean turns up at the motel room.
Oh, no.
And Sam opens the door, and without anything, he's just like, "Hiya, Sammy."
No, but it takes, like, it's just a nanosecond for Sam to recognize what's going on. Now, of course, he probably would recognize his brother from, he would have seen him at that age at one point, but still, yeah, it's like a head trip, right? So, sure. And I just thought it was wonderful that he recognized him straight away. And he's just, their world. I mean, honestly. Just
even
like,
though he's, what? You can see he's like the cogs turning in his head, like, yeah. Well,
fuck. What?
How do I make sense of this?
And when Dean's just walking around, like, getting his bag, yes, and he's like, and Sam's face is like, what am I actually watching here? Yeah. He's so baffled. And Dean's just, like, talking, and, yeah, it was a really great scene. I really loved all of that scene, and, yeah.
And then you have them go outside, and Sam, Dean pick up the woman's keys, and Sam get complimented on his son.
That was fantastic. Yeah, it was all very awkward, but very. And then the funny, I must have replayed it like so many times. I screamed with laughter when Dean actually like pulled the seat forward on the Impala, and Sam's knees nearly went into his face as he got squished in. I thought that was fantastic.
I actually thought about that, and I thought they must have had a couple of grips in the back seat to push that seat forward. There's no way Dylan could have pulled that seat forward.
But what a great...
So gorgeous.
Such a good gag. Such a great gag. And Jared played it beautifully.
Oh, his knees up under his chin. And
I think I better drive.
But then we have, you know, that whole car scene.
Delicious.
You know, which does this wonderful arc from the sort of ridiculous through to the quite emotional then, as, you know, we have Dean reflecting on, you know, the prevalence of the difficulties of puberty, including his unpredictable penis, which, you know.
Which he has no grass on the infield, by the way.
Oh. Actually, that was...
I'm in love with this episode.
I know, there was that, and what was the other comment? Oh, that Adam Glass worked in the bar scene with Tina, when she says something's a Charlie Foxtrot, which is a shorthand for clusterfuck, and I thought, very clever. Yes. Very clever. I liked that.
Oh, my gosh.
Which actually, I don't know, this is a segue into something almost no one listening will care about, but there's been a lot going on in Australian politics this week.
Oh,
and there was one of the less liked politicians was on morning television, and he used the phrase,
"See you next Tuesday."
Exactly.
I couldn't believe he said that.
And this is a politician was actually once accused of using the word cunt in Parliament, and he's on morning television's pretty much the same here as it is in the US. So you can imagine in that setting, and he's gone, see you next Tuesday. Anyway.
It was brilliant. Oh, my God.
Really? Anyway, Charlie Foxtrot and No Grass on the Infield.
No Grass on the Infield. I laughed out loud.
Oh, that was gorgeous. But then, of course, we segue into the more serious thing of Dean not having the mark and actually, you know, sort of postulating, well, maybe this is the answer.
The way to get rid of it. Yeah, we've got the answer
and
here.
He's desperate. And it was interesting because I think Sam's reaction is not, you know, the one you would immediately expect. You might expect him to go, well, let's, you know, we need to think this through or whatever. But he's quite against it from the get-go.
Yeah.
And you know, now we'll find a way. So, I mean, I liked how
and then,
you know,
it kind of rounded off with a joke again, you know, like,
yes,
well, about, I've got this in my liver, and yeah, but you can't drink for 7 years.
Yeah.
That's not funny. Come on, it's a bit funny.
And of course, It's wonderful to think, you know, and this is where the show is a gift to writing stories for us, is because, you know, to think of what would it be like for grown Sam to be, you know, as he is now, travelling around hunting with 14-year-old Dean. I mean, you know, he couldn't be an FBI agent, obviously, although he might be able to get information from people because he's a gorgeous young teenage boy.
Yes. But
yeah, it was, you know, you start thinking of all those things. Yes, he couldn't go to bars, you know, he's not going to be.
And it's going to look real weird when they're booking into motels, and there's going to be weirder
than it does now.
Yeah, weirder than it does.
You know, he's not going to be hitting on 25-year-old chicks.
No, so he'd probably try to.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, it was that, you know, I think, which is what good writing always does, is make you think of how that would unfold, you know. And obviously he is still only 14, so he's not as strong. He's got all the knowledge of grown-up Dean, obviously, but he's got a 14-year-old's body. So all those complications of what that would be like practically, and obviously Sam, though, is immediately thinking of this is not his brother.
Yeah.
I mean, as in the
and because Dean's the, like, I'm still me, I'm just Jewier.
Jewy, what a good word. I mean, I just thought that was a brilliant scene, because we do end up back with the Mark and back with, you know, what Sam wants too, and that's to have Dean back.
And I think it was great that we were actually talking about the Mark, because I did actually, one of my first things when I heard about this episode was like, oh my God, is he probably won't have the Mark of Cain, because if he's going back into his old body, you know, that's not going to have the Mark. I wonder if they're going to discuss that, because, you know, sometimes there are Monster of the Week episodes where the arc, the big arc, is just never discussed.
Lots of them, through the apocalypse.
You know, there'd be episodes where we completely forgot that Lucifer was walking around, and I thought that was fantastic, because it's so present in the brothers' lives at the moment and so front of mind for them, that to have them not think about it during this period would seem ridiculous.
Well, it's in the car with them, literally. So.
Yeah, exactly. And so I love the fact that the Mark of Cain was brought into their conversation, that, you know, now we recognise that Dean didn't have it in that moment, and it was suddenly like, well, maybe this is the thing that gets us off the hook, and they're having that conversation about it. And also I thought it was really interesting, because then as we sort of saw young Dean, there was definitely a lightness to him. Maybe it was a situation, but, you know, it got me thinking, as you said, good writing got us thinking about, well, what would it be like for Sam with 14-year-old Dean tagging around with him? It got me thinking about, well, what is Dean feeling inside now as a 14-year-old? I mean, he's physically got all these, you know, can't control the ups and downs and things like that. But, you know, whatever the Mark was shooting through his body at that point, before he became a 14-year-old, would not have been happening. So
yeah,
he's going to
feel different
feel
in a lot
different?
Of
yeah.
a lot of ways.
And, I thought the whole thing was really interesting, and I loved that we were talking about it.
Yes, me too.
Loved it.
Then they get back to the creepy house
and have the best lines ever in the history of forever.
Oh, I'm too big to fit in there.
The best visuals for the yeah.
Well, no, you're not going to say it. I am. I mean, the lore is. I mean, of course, we have the history.
You say it, Wiki.
The pain of death. but we did have the recent episode this season where we had the women talking about, you know, Sam's long fingers and speculating on the length of his penis. And of course, there is a lot of lore in fandom around the paddock. Mm-hmm. So, any reference to Sam/Jared's junk is—it's always going to be a winner with me.
Yeah,
it's a winner with me. Both boys' dicks mentioned in this episode.
Yes,
obviously need a page just on dick mention.
I was like, what's with the dick jokes mentions? In this episode?
Actual penis mentions, not people called Dick.
Yes, yes. Yeah, because, gosh, that would be a big
season
entry.
Season 7. Yes, so that was That was hilarious. But, you know, again, we've got Dean just being like Dean, being capable really and great and a smart ass.
It was really funny, but Sam's comeback was beautiful, and Jared played that so beautifully because he was like looking at him like, fuck you, man, little guy. And it was just beautiful.
Yeah, I know. And we know that Jared's often said that, you know, he doesn't think he's particularly good at comedy and it's not his, enjoy it as much. But, you know, he does it so, so well. I mean, really. And maybe that's because he's usually playing the straight guy to Dean's quipping, joking character. And when we do see him being funny, he's fucking hilarious. Anyway, inside the creepy house, we do get to meet Hansel, the Hansel of Hansel and Gretel, not of Zoolander.
Very not Zoolander, Hansel.
And we have, you know, again, there's things that echo, you know, the boys are being hunters. I love that line about, you know, we're not men, we're hunters. They're being in unison, synchronous gun pulling, all that, all the things that are quintessential Winchesters. Also quintessential Winchesters believing the best about someone only to turn around and find out that he was having them on.
They're so gullible sometimes.
I loved Katja, the witch.
She was great.
She was deliciously disgusting.
She was fabulous. I really liked her a lot.
She was scary and like
crazy,
like,
hair and
yes. And of course, then we have the tie-in though to the, you know, another part of our story with her mention of that she's been sent over by the Grand Coven because of the Rowena issue. So
which is another thing I thought was great. I was like, oh, great. Got the other arc in here as well. I really loved it. I was like, oh, cool. We got a mention of that because it really felt like, especially in the way that the ep ended, the boys were talking about it at one point towards the end, it really felt like that was like the little kind of seed for where we're going.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was nice, again, to have that, not only the Mark of Cain.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously Rowena's not been at the front of their mind. They've no idea what's become of her.
No, they've got no clue since they last saw her. They don't know who she is or what she's been up to.
Oh, wait till they find that out.
Oh, my God. It's going to blow their minds.
Yes, it'll be interesting. Yes, anyway, that'd be interesting to see where we're going with that part of
that. I actually can't wait for them to find out that.
Well, yes, and how they find it out. Is it going to be through Crowley? Is Rowena, you know, is Rowena going to approach them directly? Is she going to be happy or unhappy about whatever Crowley gets up to with them? Because
she's going to be unhappy about that.
Well, you would think so, but then I don't really know what she wants. So
no, she's a bit of a mystery.
Anyway, then we have the wonderful fight scene.
And I mean, all the way through that scene, I was yelling, shove her in the oven at my television. Because, you know, we know that that's what happens to the witch. So I'm like, oh, are they going to shove her in the oven? Oh, they've got to shove her in the oven. Shove her in the oven. So I was so excited when she got shoved in the oven.
Yes, very creepy, horrible oven.
But it was great, too, to just see Dean, you know, like suddenly become huge in little Dean's clothes. And, you know, just springing to action and just, you know, shove her in the oven, which is fantastic. But, yeah, that whole scene was great.
It was a wonderful, wonderful fight scene. Also, all that stuff inside the oven, including the hooks and that, was all VFX. So,
oh, really? That was amazing.
The fire, obviously. No, not fire, obviously, but you would, well, might assume obviously. The fire was that they didn't
otherwise,
have
a the actress is a bit of a problem. And,
yeah, the actor on fire. But that was fantastic. And then we had a really nice sort of epilogue, I think, with Tina deciding, you know, to take the second chance. And, you know, that again, that starts you thinking of, like, what would it be like now to go back and be 14 knowing what I know now, which
is different. I had that conversation on Twitter, you know, would you go back to school? You'd be so smart. You'd know everything. I probably wouldn't, actually. They know a lot more than me these days at school.
I was going to say.
I'd be such a failure.
Might go back and feel really dumb.
I think I probably would. I think their kids are way brighter these days. But you know, they're all the stuff that all this knowledge that you have, you know, to be that young and to be able to, but then have the hindrance of being that young, you know.
Sure. You know,
looking that young.
Yes. Yeah. Well, she's obviously meant to be in her mid-teens, and she looking in her mid-teens. I did think, you know, what with Claire wandering off, you know, what are these young sort of teenage girls wandering the highways of America?
What are they doing? Two of them out there now.
There's something, I don't know. I feel that there's a message or there's something in that which I haven't quite untangled yet. But, you know, that we've had this sort of a couple of people and even Hannah to some extent, but these women deciding to do something for themselves and going off into the world on their own and Charlie as well, of course. So we've had Hannah, Charlie, Claire and now Tina, these women leaving at the end of the episodes to go and do their own thing. At least they're not dying, but and at least Tina got some money.
I know. At least they gave her all the cash that they had.
And then we had that absolutely wonderful, wonderful conversation at the end.
Sam said he wanted Dean back. I love it because Dean's trying to joke and Sam's like, I'm not even joking here. Is the mark back? Like, he couldn't concentrate on anything. That Dean's like, no, what? No, nothing? Nothing? You know, and he's just like, is it back? It's obviously all he could think about and he just couldn't wait to get to away enough to be able to actually ask Dean if it was back or not. And, you know, I thought that was fantastic. Dean's trying to joke. And Sam's like, I'm not having any of it.
Yeah.
and then the whole I wanted you back thing was just like, oh my
God. And even referring to him as, you know, pulling a Dean Winchester.
Pulling a Dean Winchester. Dean's face. What?
Is, you know, I mean, you don't get much more sort of essence of Winchester brotherly love than that conversation, I think. Sam recognises that Dean did something that meant that, you know, he cut himself off from that opportunity of not having the mark, that he did sacrifice something, but at the same time Sam's happy that he's got his Dean back and that, you know, and recognising that Dean did get through the whole thing without hulking out. It was just, and then, you know, to top it all off, they get in the car and we've got them driving off to Taylor Swift and Dean just leaves it on with that little sort of, you know, smirk and a shrug, and it's just.
Oh, I love it. And how about that drive off, by the way? Was that Ackles in that car laying rubber and skidging all over the world? I bet all over the road. I bet it was.
And also, like, I just. Is something about, you know, we talk about in this episode Dean being Dean and like almost like taking the chance to be Dean. But also, you know, young Dean liked Taylor Swift. And so grown up Dean's going, I like Taylor Swift.
He also likes I'm All Out of Love. So Dean can be a little bit quirky in his music taste. So I think it's cool. Like
But it's also a lovely, it's a great, I happen to like Taylor Swift.
I freaking love this song, by the way.
And it's
also Shake It Off.
It's an appropriate song. It's sort of a hopeful song.
Very hopeful.
It's great to dance to.
It's a great song. Dean got a fabulous video.
Hands in the air and having a dance. So like that final scene, I think, goes down of it's going in my top BM moments, I think.
That's great. Yeah, that definitely. I think that final scene and also this scene in the bunker where Sam comes into the room to talk to Dean, both of those two go down as two of my top BM moments. I think both of them were fantastic in their very different but both fantastic in showing how connected these two are. I loved it.
Yeah, no, it was and as we know, as we said, we know it's the calm before the storm, but what we love is that, you know, we've got you know, we've built this solid base between them and
I don't see that fracturing again.
No, I do, but you know.
Well, I don't. Now, see, I am still hopeful.
You are still hopeful. I let's just say I think there will be difficult times ahead.
Oh, I think there'll be difficult times, but I don't think we'll ever see the kind of breakdown between them. Well, not immediately anyway, maybe next season or something, but not immediately the kind of breakdown that we've had in the past.
No, because...
I think we've been building to this, so that to me would, you know...
Yeah, and look... I have no doubt things can happen which will lead to mistrust or whatever. No one goes forward in life on some sort of, you know, upward curve and never goes back because that'd be too damn easy. So, but it's having, and as you and I have talked about just about every podcast we've done about this season, having the space for them to have these moments, which have been repeated throughout the season, of them working on their relationship and taking, you know, go back to that scene of them sitting with the green cooler, between them having a moment, having the time to think about where they're at. And I think that this whole season's been about them had space.
I mean, they had a week in the bunker before we saw them, you know. So what are they doing? Why weren't we watching?
Well, Dean was just doing research, and I'm sure Sam was doing a lot of research as well. And maybe they caught up on Game of Thrones or something.
Yes, they probably watched telly.
But yeah, no, we're
in.
Watch
that.
So of course we're at a sort of, it feels like the season's been going on a lot longer, which is a compliment, because I think that it's packed in a lot already. But I know we're at 12. We'll be, you know, we usually start to get back onto, you know, there's a climax always around episode 16 to do with the front half of the season. So I expect we'll be building up with the Mark of Cain to something around there. But wonderful episode, wonderful work by Dylan Everett. You know, this episode could have not worked if his acting couldn't carry it, if Jared couldn't carry playing off him, if the writing didn't capture the boys so well. So, you know, kudos to Adam Glass. I want a big shout out to Serge for that scene where the Impala goes through the tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
So it was just beautiful.
Yeah. There was a bit, the entire Impala looked beautiful.
Big shout out to Jerry Wannock, who posted some wonderful photos of the sets on his Twitter, including in the kitchen there was Hansel and Gretel wallpaper that came from Paris that he got specifically as an homage to Serge, who's Quebecian. Quebec.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, so it actually had little Hansel and Gretel on the wallpaper and it was French. So, like, that's the level of detail, people.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
That's great. Yeah. Now, this was a great, one of my favourite of the season for sure. And you know what? I think I'd like to watch it back-to-back with Bad Boys, because I think that would play really well, don't you think? I don't know that I could handle all the feels, though. That would be, you know, 2 hours, just shy of 2 hours of complete feels.
Well, and a lovely, I suppose, top and tailing of Dean's relationship with Sam when he was that age, you know, particularly that final scene, and then Dean's relationship with Sam now, even though he looks the same in both. But, yeah, wonderful. Jared, I don't know what size your penis is, but you are huge when it comes to doing the comedy and you should do more of it.
And I would be a very lax Dean girl if I didn't give a big shout out to the hoodie.
The hoodie. For fans who, you know, I know people are immersed in fandom at different levels, but Dean, of course, famously appeared in the hoodie back in Faith. He was dying after being attacked by the raw head, and the hoodie became a symbol of a vulnerable Dean.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a whole fic community called Hoodie Time where people write hurt comfort stories about Dean. So, you know, it has a special resonance for fans, the old Dean in a hoodie. Very rarely, well, not sighted since season one. So,
Which was episode 12, by the way.
Oh, nice little bit of mirroring there.
Yeah.
I know people were talking about how was Dean in, grown up Dean in the same clothes as
it's
young
magic.
Dean? It's like, it's magic, people. How is he
14 years old? It's magic.
It's funny, isn't it? What we'll accept and what people are like wrangling over.
Exactly.
You know,
why wasn't he naked then in the little jail cell? How come he was suddenly in clothes?
Well, no, people were saying, oh, it's really creepy because he must have been naked and Hansel dressed him. And it's like, no, it was.
You're creepy magic. For thinking that.
The other thing I noticed people were picking up on was the flowers that were used in the spell were yarrow, which had been referenced back in Crossroad Blues at the Crossroads. And people were like, why didn't Sam remember yarrow? And because he referred to it as a flower called yarrow or something. And I'm like, it was 8 years ago and they've both been to hell since.
I know. God, I'm sure they lost a few brain cells in their
but it's like
damage to hell. I know.
All the things you can remember.
They can't actually remember everything. They're brilliant. They're brilliant, but they can't remember everything.
And, you know, they have been both knocked out and choked a lot. So.
They've been knocked out way too many times, man. They're just going to end up with terrible brain damage.
Oh, dear. It's,
Fandom never ceases to amuse.
Yarrowgate, we'll call that one.
Yarrowgate! I like it. But yeah, the hoodie was spectacular. He looked adorable in his little hoodie outfit, and that especially that like very 1950s style teenagerish t-shirt that he had on with the stripes.
It's some lovely fan art of that on Tumblr too.
Really? I need to see it.
It appeared like 15 just of the shirt and hoodie, like no head, just close up. Really gorgeous piece. Look and yeah. I know that I think Fandom's fantasy now is to have an episode with Dylan Everett and Colin Ford in it. And have
there's no reason that can't happen.
There is no reason. Please.
Unless if someone doesn't write it.
Yes. I'm not sure how it would fit in, but seriously, if you could get both of them and
Colin's taller than Dylan and, you know, the whole thing works out.
And look, for God's sake, throw Jeffrey Dean Morgan in as John Winchester.
He's going to have to dye that hair of his. A little grey.
That would be pretty amazing.
That would be pretty amazing.
Anyway, it was all amazing. We'll be back after next week's episode as well.
Yes, we will.
Halt and Catch Fire. Mm-hmm. The internet goes terribly wrong. I think we all know
Which never happens.
I think we actually have two more episodes. There's a week off on February the 24th.
Is there?
Yes, there is.
I didn't know. So we've got next week and then a week off.
So we've got 13 and 14 and then there's a week off and then back, I think, with 15, at least three, and then we do change nights in the middle of
Yeah, and then we have March. 2 weeks off in March.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then come back. Is that right? Have 2 weeks off in March.
Yeah, and there'll probably be another couple of weeks in April.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it all needs to end up mid-late May. Whenever sweeps week is. Thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you very much.
We couldn't wait to do this week's
podcast. I was so excited. I just love this episode. Could you tell?
Oh, we both did. It was brilliant. Thanks for listening. Listen to us on iTunes or Podomatic, and we will be back next week with more Women of Letters.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is wolspn@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.